Radio Reverb. Brighton Festivals now. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival with Melissa Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. On Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melissa Dennett. This is Monday's Brighton Festival special. We're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeated 10pm and 9am the next day.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and for the remaining week of Brighton Festival, we'll be looking behind the scenes, meeting some of the performers, creators and the people who make it happen. Today, we're meeting a performer who asks questions about the way misfortune can shatter your dreams.
Looking forward to children's and classical events still to come in the Brighton Festival.
We'll be hearing about an anarchic show coming to Worthing.
And looking back at some of the events which took place over the weekend.
All that and more in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Well, it's been a real roller coaster 2 weeks. I can't believe we're into the third week of the festival. I always get that kind of sad feeling.
I get that shattered kind of feeling.
But there is that as well, yes, completely knackered feeling, yeah. But actually, looking at the programme, there are some gems.
It's not winding down this week.
It really is not.
So we're going to try and fit as much information about some things coming up over the next few days at the festival. But do recommend have a look online and look in the programme, because we simply cannot mention everything.
We'll do our best, though. I think there are some dark horses this week. I think there are some things which don't necessarily jump out of the programme at you, but I think they're going to be absolute winners. So we're going to be looking at some of those over the course of the week. But one of the main festival strands each year is children's events. And this year, the theme of storytelling, inspired by guest artistic director Rokia Traore, has been woven through the children's programme of events. Brighton Festival's Pippa Smith came to Radio Reverb and looked ahead to some of the children and families events in this final week of the Brighton Festival.
Well, I suppose my big event is it's called Another Star to Steer By. And there again, storytelling theme, the idea that stars are sort of where you hang your stories up. And so every time a new story is told, another star hits the sky. And that's going to be on at the Brighthelm Centre at the end of the festival for children 6+ and their families. But it's a commission. It's never been before. Mm. So that's very exciting. And it's a commission from a new writer who's only just moved to Brighton, called Andrew McColden. He's actually got 4 children's BAFTAs, so he's got to be able to write a play, hasn't he?
Well, you would think, wouldn't you? Yes.
You would. Yeah, he does a lot of work for the BBC, and he writes for children's proms and things. I've got every faith, and it looks really exciting. And the other thing about that play, Another Star to Steer By, if people look in their brochure towards the end where it's billed at the Brighthelm, you can also book it for your school. So it's a flexible show. It'll go in a van. The paper boat folds up and it sails into your school, basically. So people can book it and turn themselves into festival promoters. Our Shakespeare this year is Midsummer Night's Dream, which is already proving very popular, actually.
I mean, that's outdoor one again?
Outdoor, Midsummer Night's
it's
Dream.
It's always very brave doing outdoor events in May.
But it is the end. That's why we do the last weekend. Yeah. And we've moved. We're not at Boat this year. We're back at Dyke Road. So very, very accessible for people because it's very near the clock tower. It's the rest garden opposite St Nicholas Church. So it's called St Nick's Rest Garden. And we're in there. The Residents Association are going to do some sort of food offer. And Midsummer Night's Dream, it's got to work, really, hasn't it? It's the same company, the people who do All Male. Are All Male.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, because we like them, and they seem to work, you know, and it's the start of their national tour, and they come to Brighton first, so exciting.
Children's programmer Pippa Smith there, excitedly talking about some of the events coming up in this final week of the Brighton Festival.
And let us turn the clock back to the first weekend of the Brighton Festival. 30 years of Mr. Bongo event at the Dome kicked the whole caboodle off. And this was one of the performers. This is Holly Cook, and it's so different here. Casting our minds back to the start of the Brighton Festival, and the 30 years of Mr. Bongo event took place at Brighton Dome. That was Holly Cook, and the track was It's So Different Here. You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals, guiding you gently by the hand through this last week of the Brighton Festival. Stacks and stacks of stuff happening, though. So it's a really exciting week. I think there's going to be some sleeper hits, you know, tucked away in this year's final week programme of the festival?
It really is one where it's a question of taste with a lot of different shows, because there's music, there's dance, there's loud bangs, there's comedy, there's lots of different stuff. But I think it's, you know, personal decisions as to where to go, because you can't do everything.
Yeah.
So but should we have a look at
Let's give it a go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one that really, really catches my eye and I'm very much looking forward to seeing. It's only on Tuesday, so it's one night only. And it's the UK premiere of Trap Town at the Dome. And this is brought to us by the Belgium choreographer Wim van der Kuybus. And he's created a distinct but unfamiliar world riven by a long-running conflict, but where the sparks of freedom are emerging. It's multimedia. And there was an architect involved with the design of the set.
It looks great.
It does look fantastic. And I would say, if you're thinking, what is she talking about? I don't know, because I've not seen it yet. I have seen the video, the preview video on brightonfestival.org. Looks great to me. That's one night only, Tuesday, 21st of May, 7:30, Brighton Dome.
Now, you always do take a chance with these things, but I think if something is on for one night, I think, well, blow it. Give it a go. Take a chance on it, because you may find you live to regret it if you don't go and see it. It might be that one that everyone is talking about this week. Certainly looks quite amazing. And coming up on Wednesday as well, Wednesday sees the first performance of the large-scale spectacular Silence. That's one of the outdoor ones at Black Rock. I haven't looked at the weather forecast yet, but fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I did get foot rot down at Black Rock one year. An event I went to was lashings of rain. It's by a Polish company. I'm glad you give me the Polish company to pronounce. Teatro Biuro Pedrosi, I'm going with that. It's a moving insight into the lives of ordinary citizens trapped by war. This is the one with the bangs. It's got pyrotechnics, it's got flamethrowers on stilts and soldiers on motorbikes. Two shows, an evening on Wednesday through Saturday, but tickets for the earlier show on Wednesday at 8:30 have all sold out. So if you're thinking about going along to this, get your tickets for the 10 o'clock show now before they disappear off too.
Yeah, I think all of the 8:30 shows are sold out.
Oh, right. Okay.
All of them, right through that run, Wednesday to Saturday. Everyone's looked at it and thought, that looks great, I'm going along. It's the early shows are sold out. The 10 p.m. shows, there are tickets available. So I wouldn't, you know, take too long pondering that one.
No, indeed not.
And as for the weather forecast, it might rain later in the week, maybe. But don't let that put you off. Come on.
Get your waterproofs out. Come on, we're English. Waterproofs.
Yeah, and if you're worried about that, you can go inside. There are things to see inside, but really, come on. One example of something you can see inside is Wednesday night at the Theatre Royal. That's Tribe bringing their debut work, Still I Rise. It's a call to arms performed by an all-female cast. Raw, gutsy and emotive dance work from the choreographer Victoria Fox. And she's creating a stark world where the dancers show an uplifting determination. The piece is channeling the resilient, unapologetic nature of the seminal poem written by the African-American writer, singer and activist Maya Angelou. And Still I Rise is at the Theatre Royal in Brighton on Wednesday night. It's also being shown at 7:30 at the Connaught Theatre in Worthing on Thursday the 23rd.
And we are planning on having participants and producers from all those programmes on the show over the course of the week. It's something else that I'm looking forward to as well. It's a 1923 silent film, Salome. It's going to be on the Old Market on Thursday, featuring a live soundtrack, which I love live soundtracks, by Circuit des Yeux, a.k.a. Hayley Four, who has a very spooky Nico-esque sound. And it's based on Oscar Wilde's original Salome. It looks very, very fruity, very, very camp, with based on designs that Aubrey Beardsley did to illustrate the original Oscar Wilde work, and that live soundtrack. I'm really looking forward to that one. So Thursday at the Old Market, I'm hoping to catch up with Hayley, aka Circuit des Yeux, to have a chat with her about that. Let us have a little taste of what she sounds like. It's got a very interesting video with this one, when she's on a treadmill with nothing on.
Fruity.
Very, very fruity. Anyway, this is Circuit des Yeux and Do the Dishes. And don't go on the treadmill without your clothes on. You might have a mishap. That is a little flavour of what you might expect coming up on Thursday at the Old Market in Hove. That is Circuit des Yeux, a.k.a. Hayley Four. The track is Do the Dishes. Really, really curious video to go with that one. She's doing a live soundtrack. Hopefully she'll keep her clothes on to the 1920s film, a black and white silent film, Salome. That's at the Old Market in the Brighton Festival. You're listening to Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special with Melita Dennett.
I get the feeling people might not complain if she took her clothes off. This is Brighton. Come on.
Well, I know, but, you know, I'm not keen on that kind of thing. Don't like that kind of thing around here. Put it away. Put
you
it away.
You are full of it tonight, Melita. Anyway, My Left Right Foot, the musical, is probably one of the most talked about shows in this year's Brighton Festival. It's the story of a group of amateur dramatic actors who try to do the right thing by staging a performance of My Left Foot, the film where Daniel Day-Lewis played Christy Brown, a man with cerebral palsy.
However, the cast get their knickers in a proper old PC twist when they realise the actor who actually has cerebral palsy is nowhere near as good as the able-bodied actor in this fast-paced and very, very sweary hit show. It ran at the Theatre Royal last week and Kyla Harris went to see it. Kyla is one of the people behind The Other Screen. That's a series of events dedicated to exploring representations of disabled people and deaf people in film and how those outlooks can be widened. Kyla, welcome to Radio Reverb. So My Left Right Foot was a hit with the critics. Was it a hit with you?
It was a hit with me. I found it really refreshing. And I think I'm a musical lover and I love it when musicals are kind of turned on their head and you don't get the kind of he saw her, she fell in love kind of story.
So it revels in its own un-PC-ness, doesn't it? And I found that quite delicious, actually.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think everyone was up for... everyone was to be made fun of in the musical. Every single character, including the disabled character. And to me, that was also what was really refreshing, is that it wasn't... The disabled character wasn't caught in these binaries between being put on a pedestal or being, you know, kind of made fun of, really.
Yeah, they're all very flawed characters, all in their own way. What I liked about it as well was one of the actors was signing as she was performing. So she was signing the actual dialogue. She was one of the characters as part of it. And they also had the subtitles across the top, which is great in a musical because you can't always get it.
Well, they really integrated all of the access features. They really talked about the set, you know, describing the set, audio describing the set on stage as things were happening. And I loved how they played with that. That, to me, again, was refreshing. It was fantastic just to see someone having fun with that. You know, Robert Softley Gale, who was the writer and director, I'm sure that he had a hand in that. And I thought just to see it that well done, because I've seen it badly done before, because it is a tempting thing to do, to want to kind of include subtitles and include BSL interpreting as well as audio description and have disabled actors. People kind of think, well, that's a lot to, you know, that's a lot to kind of manage in one show. And I think it worked here.
See, I'm the only person, I think, then, that really did not like this. And like you, I love musicals. I'm a big fan of musical theatre. But it just, the show just, I loved for the first 10, 15 minutes, and then it just started to me to repeat slightly, and it just started to aggravate me.
You may not be the only one that didn't like it. I could see that it would rub a lot of people the wrong way, and you know, I think a lot of the audience was reacting and not always reacting out of excitement and glee.
I mean, I did like the way that it challenged an able-bodied audience to look at their own assumptions. I thought that was really strong.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned the audience, because I looked behind me and I saw a sea of kind of, you know, white presenting cis heterosexual seeming people, and I thought, I'm glad to, you know, kind of middle class, you know, and I went, well, this is actually a show that I'm glad to see this audience here, because really, you get, you know, with diversity and with access, you get a lot of solidarity between kind of LGBTQ people and disabled people, and I'm speaking very broadly here and generally, people of color, and to look back and see a mainly, as I say, white cis kind of middle-aged middle class audience was like, wow, these people are engaging with this and these you know, themes and this content, and to me that's exciting.
I think that's what comes of it, a company like National Theatre of Scotland being involved with a history where people, there's an audience that know that if they go along they're expecting a great show, and so there's no doubt. I mean, I love the set, some of the acting I thought was fantastic. You know, I liked what they were trying to do in it. It just, I thought I could have had enough of it after about half an hour.
So you're saying it had potential?
No, it had more than potential, and obviously people liked it. And I think, as I was saying earlier in the show, that the great thing about festival is there's something and things that you can find that are great and that you love, and other things that you really don't like but someone else loves, and you can have discussions about it, and that brings people together to talk and discuss why they liked. And then, and potentially you can make me reappraise, well, I doubt it though, but you could make me reappraise my response to that particular production.
You know, to me it was within the context of one of my favourite musicals, which is You're in Town. And I don't know if you've ever heard it, but it was made by an American who, in the 90s, I believe it was the 90s, came to the UK and traveled around Europe and realized that he needed to pay for public toilets. And he was kind of aghast and thought, I know, I'm going to make a dystopian a musical.
Love it.
That is about a world in which we need to pay to pee. Right. And to me, that was within this context. It's really taking something that a lot of people don't know about, might not have this kind of perspective on, which is the idea that actually stories of disabled people need to be told from disabled people and not forgotten. And I think that was the point to me, was the idea that it wasn't about Daniel Day-Lewis and his performance. It was about the person behind it, you know, and that was Christy Brown. Mm. And to me, that was the story that shone, and how they went about that was intriguing and fascinating and fun to me.
See, I could now do a defence of Bad Girls the Musical, which I saw three times, and I think I was probably the only person who saw Bad Girls the Musical three times, other than members of the production team. But, you know, so each to their own, I'd say. I mean, I'm glad I went. I enjoyed it. I found it interesting. But I was very glad when it finished and I went home, because I'd had enough.
Mm. I found it interesting because it dealt with a lot of other issues as well. And I, one of the things I would say about it I didn't quite like was I felt it tried to cram too much in. And obviously the core of it was the question of who should play a disabled person, and is an able-bodied actor the better person to play a disabled person? So when I interviewed Robert, who wrote and directed it, and I interviewed a couple of the actors, they said, you know, we don't reach a conclusion on that, and it doesn't really do that. What it does, it explores these other threads as well. So it looks at sexuality for people with disabilities, and the fact that someone with a disability can be an attractive person, and challenges those. So I quite like the fact it was adding those other things into the pot, although I felt it kind of tried to cram too much in.
It was a bit of a sample platter.
That's a good phrase.
Smorgasbord.
And I think when you have content about disability, there's so much to be explored because it hasn't been explored, or it's been explored by non-disabled people. And when, you know, someone who has a disability is able and has a platform to be able to talk about these subjects, I mean, it's a bit of a what do you focus on, because there's so much, and also this idea of how do you represent, because then you become representative of a group of people, and I think that is something to tackle with this, and I think that possibly editing, possibly refining could have happened, but you know, I was happy with it.
Beyond this show, if you look at the festival programme as a whole, do you look at it and think there's some great stuff here that reflects me and disability and other disabled people, or do you look at it and say there's just this one piece that's doing that?
I looked at the programme and I was really excited to see in titles, you know, the word disabled. And to me, some people kind of shy away from using the word disabled even, you know, and I think some people also prefer, you know, neurodiversity and, you know, there's a whole umbrella, you know, there's so much diversity within disability. And as I say, you know, some people prefer the term disabled, some people prefer the term neurodiverse if they're talking about their own neurodiversity. And so I was happy to see that there was quite a bit of content about those subjects. However, I'm hungry for more.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds, you know, just talking to you now, there's plenty of areas that can be explored through it. So it's not as if, you know, there's not a lot to unpick and explore in theatre.
Well, it has to be said, someone who is doing more is you, Kyla. I think we need to get our money's worth out of you. You had an event last Friday. You run a series of films. What have you got coming up? You've always got something interesting on the go.
Well, actually, I do. Well, oh, this is. I kind of, you know, I'm new to the field of representing disability in a way. You know, it's I have a lot of lived experience, right? 19 years of being a wheelchair user, and right now I'm actually in the process of writing a TV show. That features.
See, I told you she was up to something.
Yeah, and it really explores disability through a female friendship and from a female perspective, and we don't see that a lot. You know, actually, even in this, my left right foot, we see a lot of exploring disability from a male perspective, and while that's absolutely valid and interesting, again, I want more. You know. I want more, and I want more from a female perspective.
Honestly, these disability campaigners—they just want it all, don't they?
And a ramp too.
And a ramp. Oh, you don't want access to buildings in Brighton, do you, by any chance?
Oh, don't get me started.
I mean, there is one thing as well. I think to mention about the Theatre Royal, because they have a limited amount of disabled access space. And we tried to get you in for a view on one night, and it's like, sorry, all the spaces are booked. So you know, tackling these kind of issues is absolutely crucial. It's a priority.
Well, it was really interesting when you know that you mentioned that, and then you just previously mentioned Rebecca about how, you know, what would I have, like, what did I see in the program? Well, there was a limited of things that I could see that because of access. You know, one of the things that really shocked me, actually, and this is you know, fresh off the press, is that yesterday I tried to go to Phoenix Gallery, and I was, you know, super excited, gung ho, love the Phoenix, one of the best to me, you know, arts venues in town, and they have 5 floors of open studios, and I was only able to access the ground floor because their lift was broken.
Oh.
Now, after hearing that, I also found out that the lift had been broken for 10 years.
Right.
And so to me, it's really about prioritizing. I think if you're going to be an open venue, a venue that promotes accessibility to the arts, which I think the Phoenix has always kind of stood for, you know, free gallery space, free quality, free entry, you know, kind of thing. And to me, I'd like to, I have no affiliation with the Phoenix, but I'd love to get in touch with them and see about getting a campaign going to make, to raise funds for lift access at the Phoenix.
So I think Iron Men is on the ground floor though, isn't it? Did you see those photos? Because I love that exhibition, just to...
I did like it. Yeah, good.
You got to see that anyway, because it's fantastic photography. Yeah. But the lift situation is an interesting one to raise. Definitely.
Kind of tell us where people can find out about what you're doing with The Other Screen and what you've got coming up with that. Then,
yeah, I didn't even mention. You know, I get so enthusiastic about these topics, because I say, you know, it's very limited to have a platform for disabled people. So I put on The Other Screen. The Other Screen does its film and discussion about representations of disabled people, as you mentioned before. We just had one on Friday night. It went fantastically well. We had a full house at Fabrica and had Eden and Andrew Cotting, who are father and daughter duo, who collaborate on films together and really raise kind of some questions about collaborating with family, with someone with a learning disability. And in the future, we hope to screen films that have to do with disability and sexuality. We hope to look at, you know, the whole kind of spectrum and gamut of representations of disabled people that are out there.
Brilliant. Carla Harris, thank you very much. Oh, tell us your Facebook for that.
So it's The Other Screen. So if you
the
just
other screen. Yeah. Great. Thank you very much for joining us on Radio Reverb. I'm really glad you enjoyed my left right foot. I'm really interested to hear your perspectives on that, because obviously, you know, we're coming at it from a very different angle, and I think it's been great to hear what you have to say, and I'm really glad you enjoyed it.
Well, thank you again for putting me on the show.
It's a great pleasure. Always a pleasure to have you on Radio Reverb.
And you are listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM and online. This is the Festival Radio Special with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals.
And Superho at the Attenborough Centre is the story of a young woman seen through her own eyes who has a dream about her future but falls into a world of online sex work. It asks questions about choices when money is tight and also what we teach young girls about their worth. Well, the solo show opened yesterday at the Attenborough Centre. I went to see it, I loved it, and I spoke earlier on the phone to Superho's creator and performer Nicole Leckie. So Superho, it's a solo show following the mixed fortunes of Sasha. who we first meet as a 24-year-old. She's stalling with her mum, her little sister and her stepdad, and she dreams of being a singer. One of the things that really struck me about the show was you feel this immediate rapport with Sasha, even though she's a bit of a snotty brat.
Yeah, it's funny because when I wrote Super Ho and then we got around to performing it, I felt like, oh, the audience might not like her. Because you're right, she can be a bit snotty. But it's all a facade, isn't it, with Sasha? And I think you can see those little chinks in her armour, where a lot of the time with people who are kind of giving out like a kind of bad attitude, there's often something going on much deeper below the surface. And that's what we sort of journey. That's the journey we go on with Sasha, where we kind of find out what is lying underneath and where is that kind of pain coming from.
There is that journey, because there's that very subtle exploration of how misfortune can befall someone through no fault of their own, and then how one bad decision can lead to another until you get in too deep. I mean, it's very nuanced in the way that she does kind of have her decline.
Yeah, it's one thing I found when I was researching this about just the kind of a rapid decline of like one decision, and then a week later you're in over your head. And lots of the young women I spoke to who are sort of doing, and also doing it through online means, social media escorting, which is slightly different. It was just a kind of decision. You can sign up in minutes and within minutes, and then by the end of the day, you could have your first client. So something that can be quite a quick decision can quickly, I guess, define your life at that moment in time. And I guess I'm kind of exploring whether that decision has to define you and whether you can kind of change towards the end of it, you know, and make new decisions for yourself, no matter what kind of path you've been led down.
Mm-hmm. And it also explores that notion that online popularity and your Instagram image are actually not true reflections of reality. That's a very strong point that comes over.
Yeah, completely. And it's like I've got my own relationship with social media, I guess. And I often do these kind of, right, I'm not going to go on Instagram for a month. I'm not going to go on Twitter or something, because sometimes I feel like you need to kind of look after yourself like how you would a child. And you think, I wouldn't let a child sit on Instagram all day and just having this constant feed of this is what you should be like, this is how your life should be. And that's something I think I really explore with Sasha, in that she's portraying that she's having the best time ever, to the point that she looks at her own page and thinks, oh god, like her life is just amazing, and kind of feels a dissociation between the life she has online and the life she's living daily. And I think that's something a lot of people can really relate to.
Yeah, I did like that line where she looks at the Instagram feed, she goes, I want that life, and then realises, oh, it's her life, and it's not as glossy as it looks. I mean, is it a spoiler to say that ultimately it's a positive message of following your dreams?
No, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that, because I guess that's one thing I feel, that like really it doesn't matter really where you're from or maybe the decisions you've made in life. You know, I guess maybe I'm truly hopeful and kind of, you know, that you can change. And I think that in a way that I didn't want it to feel like, oh, really bubblegum, because she does go through all these harrowing things, but lots of people do in life. Mm. And actually you can come out the other side of it. And you know, we're not set in stone as humans. We can change. So I think that was important for me to have that as a take home, that, yeah, in spite of adversity, you know, and also you don't know what will happen next. You know, I guess we can say the ending of the play is positive, but there's still two versions of what happens next in Sasha's life. Like, does she continue down that route, or does she, you know, follow a completely different route that might be a much sadder path? I don't know. There's still two endings for her, definitely.
We were certainly all rooting for her. It's a very provocative title for a compassionate show. Was there ever any time where you thought, like, maybe this title isn't necessarily going to sell it in a way that I actually wanted to go?
Do you know what? No, I feel like once you see it, you get it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like the title just kind of came to me and then it just really stuck. And it's interesting to me because Super Ho, it's like that's how she feels, like people view her, and she has her own complexities in terms of, like, you know, if you are a victim or if you're not. And that's how she sees herself to some degree. So I think it's a necessary title, actually. And it's one that through the journey of it, we find that Sasha can or can't shake off, really. I just think I really, really believe so passionately in the story. And it was a world that I kept dipping into when I would see Instagram, and I'd see the way certain people talk about certain women, and I just became really fascinated, and I just really wanted to tell a story that wasn't necessarily completely portraying people as victims, but also not, you know, there's a real grey area with it.
Super Who seems like a show that would be great for a young audience. All the issues it's got within it, family problems, self-esteem, poverty, attitudes towards young women. Have you played it before to younger audiences?
I mean, the Royal Court were really brilliant in getting younger audiences in as well. So not always just your typical kind of Royal Court audience. So we had younger audiences maybe than was typical for them, but we haven't, there are currently no plans to sort of say, like, take it to schools or kind of show it. I mean, people were brilliant in that when they would come and see it, they would recommend. They do these rush tickets where, you know, you can call up on the day and get them. And they sold really, really quickly. And that was mostly to a younger audience. And you're right, it does go down brilliantly, actually, because it's something they can identify with and engage with in a different way, I think, to an older audience. But I think you're right. I think more young people should see it, for sure. The audiences in Bright have been so amazing, the two shows we've done so far. It was just so magical. I mean, I kind of got to chat to everybody afterwards, and it was just really, really great, actually, just getting the feedback and stuff.
That was Nicole Leckie, writer and performer of Super Ho. That is on tonight, Monday and Tuesday at the Attenborough Centre. And I went to see it yesterday. Now, she did two shows yesterday. I went to the evening show, and we were queuing up to go in, and some people from the Attenborough Centre came out to say, there's a bit of a delay. She'd injured herself. Because during the show, she sings and she dances as well. And she'd managed to twist her ankle really badly. So it was all a bit kind of like, will she, won't she? Will it happen, won't it happen? Eventually, you know, the show must go on. What a trooper. So Nicole came on stage. She did it as a red performance, sitting down all the way through the show. But I'll tell you what, that audience were really rooting for her. And to me, it absolutely did not spoil the performance one jot. And I was with a friend and we were like, well, would she have done anyway? Just kind of walked around the stage a bit. I mean, the storytelling, the writing and the performance is fantastic. You know, it was started off at the Royal Court and had rave reviews there. Come down to Brighton, it's getting full houses. So it absolutely did not spoil it. And I'd like to wish Nicole all the best for a speedy recovery, but she's going to have to do the rest of her performances sat down, unfortunately.
And I think tonight, I checked earlier, tonight's sold out. So there might be returns, but the Tonight Show, that's Monday's show, was sold out. And tickets possibly still available for tomorrow, 8 p.m. at the Attenborough Centre. But I'd get in there quickly if you're thinking about it.
Yeah, and it's one of those shows as well. I mean, you know, you go to a show and quite often things are very dark, and it has its dark moments. But as I said there in the chat with Nicole, you know, is it a spoiler to say it's got an uplifting and positive ending to it, which it does. So it does leaves you feeling good, and it leaves you feeling positive and optimistic, which is quite unusual for some Brighton Festival shows. Some I come away feeling quite dark from.
The exploration of dystopia amongst many of them doesn't really help with lifting the spirits, potentially.
There
does
is
it?
A lot of dystopia, isn't there? Yeah, there is. But there is, we've got some uplifting stuff still to come, because we're going to be chatting to Spy Monkey in a bit. They're bringing their show Cooped to Worthing, so taking the Brighton Festival further afield. Mark Johnson has also been out and about over the course of the weekend, so we'll be hearing from him about what he went to see. Let's have a little bit of Brighton music. This is a new track from Brighton's Bamboo. They're a two-piece. Harks back to the 80s. In a rather lovely way. It's called Weeping Idols.
Support us with your grace when we are tired.
From Brighton, that's Bamboo. And that's a new track from them that's called Weeping Idols. Very nice 80s vibe to that one. Nothing to do with the festival whatsoever. I just fancied playing it because I like it. This is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. And Mark Johnson from Slipstream program.
You're all right, Melita.
I've got my teeth in
third
upside
week.
Down. third week. Tooth rot. Mark Johnson has been to see A Dream Mandate on Saturday at the Dome. This is fronted by Rocchia Traore with Malian traditional instruments alongside modern and contemporary songs by people like Jacques Brel, Bob Marley and Fela Kuti.
Yeah.
Mark, fill us in.
I thought it was a great, really great evening. It was a fundraiser for the Passerelle Foundation, which is Rocchia Traore's kind of arts foundation, where they encourage young artists and designers and musicians to actually tour and exhibit their work more in Mali because and the African continent, because what tends to happen is these musicians are popular abroad, but they're not very well known at home.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the USP, really, of the Passerelle Foundation. And there's three artistic studios and blocks and galleries all connected together via a nice big garden. That's what she was telling me about. And there was a fantastic choir of four great singers and five really superb musicians. They started with four traditional sort of Malian folk songs. And Rocky Atroyori was very much in the background, just part of a choir. She didn't take over, or it wasn't about her. It was about each musician, and each member of the choir sang like an individual track, like the lead of each track. One of the musicians was from her band that we saw a couple of weeks back. And then she became more the centre point. She took the lead. And yes, they did sing some more modern tracks. There was a great version of a track called Zimbabwe by Bob Marley, which I didn't really sort of recognise at first, and it just built fantastically. And it was just absolutely fantastic, I thought. Possibly a little bit too short, really.
Oh, really? Okay. This is not like you, because normally you're Mr. Grumpy Guts.
There was a fantastic track they did towards the end called Tassadoni, which is like an almost like a traditional track, but it's from the sort of 70s era, and it's sung all over Mali and that parts of Africa, and they did a tremendous version of that. And then the encore, well, there was the track they played, and the vocals were basically Je T'aime and We Love You, but it was kind of repeated. And this kind of sinews in her voice, it was just absolutely brilliant.
Wow.
And it went on for like 15 minutes, and the choir all did their bits. And you would think that kind of repetitive kind of verse would be sort of too much, but it seemed to sort of increase in its passion.
It was kind of hypnotic.
And I just thought it was absolutely amazing.
Wow,
I really
brilliant.
Loved it.
He's got a massive smile on his face.
It strikes me that Rocky is having fun at the Domes. That's two concerts there. But it's Theatre Royal Tuesday night, I think.
I think that'll be a completely different sort of thing, much more serious and spoken word.
That's the secondary mandate, right?
The Kings of Mali and you know, Mali's sort of past. But, I mean, this was... I don't know, she was very inspirational and really seemed to be genuinely having a great time. And she comes across very sort of mellow and quiet on her tracks. Yeah. You know, to be honest, I think she needs to release a live album, because live, she's just a completely different, it's like a completely different singer, really.
Right. Rockier, Mark says, you need to get this live album out, love, all right?
I know she's listening. Tell me a bit about the audience. Was it busy?
It was, say, 85, 90% full. Yeah,
okay, that's good.
And crowd?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering about the kind of audiences that have been attracted to this, because obviously, you know, with Rocky Traore's influence, there's been a lot of Malian music, and the Malian Dance Night tonight at the Old Market is sold out. I'm just wondering how many BME people are attracted to come along in terms of, are they seeing it as being for them,
not,
or is it just
many.
A kind of a sort of white
that
middle class?
And the age of the audience was slightly older this time round. You know, it was an older audience. I don't know how we address that, really. Does Brighton have enough BME proportion of their
population that wants
to see it? I don't know.
I think it doesn't. I think it's a question of how people are brought in. It may be that, you know, ticket price can be a barrier, and also where people live. So if people are living a little bit further out, coming into Brighton can be quite an expensive thing.
The top price ticket was £22.50, and I know it was a fundraiser, so it's possibly slightly a different thing, but that's quite a lot to pay.
It is quite a lot,
a group of you. But the audience, there weren't very many BME people there, no.
Okay, shame. Our place is certainly doing a lot to address that as well, but out in the communities. And I'm looking at the time very briefly. Okay. Then what else is coming up that has caught your eye, Mark?
Played Twice, which is a thing I saw last year. Dave Okumu did a Miles Davis album, which was kind of blue. They did their
I remember that last year.
And they you listen to the album first, and then they do their interpretation. This time round, It is Bill Evans, the Bill Evans Trio Classic Sunday at the Village Vanguard, and I'm not familiar with that record at all. So.
It's that classic you don't know it.
Well, yeah, it's probably it's probably something I should know more about, and I apologise if I don't.
I hold my hands up as well.
Yeah. I don't either. I don't know it.
Yeah, you don't know nothing about music. You keep out of this.
But he is great.
Waterloo.
I'm turning her mic off and she sings now.
He is a great musician, David Cormu, and tells this amazing story. Told me this amazing story last time round about when he was electrocuted on stage in Nigeria.
Yikes.
And one of the other musicians had to literally kick his hands off the guitar that he was playing at the time because he was getting the full current. And he was actually in a wheelchair for a few months while he recovered and, you know, was in a bad way,
right.
But he's now back to full strength, and yeah.
Well, Mark Johnson, thank you very much for looking back and looking forward to what's happening in the Brighton
Enjoyed
Festival.
It.
And as usual, please do go to the brightonfestival.org website. Finally, Brighton Spy Monkey are regulars at the Brighton Festival. Their show is always unpredictable, anarchic, and frequently very, very daft. They were last here with The Complete Deaths. That's all the deaths in Shakespeare popped into one show. Now they're bringing Cooped to the Pavilion Theatre in Worthing. It's described as Hitchcock's Rebecca meets the Pink Panther, and I met up with Spy Monkey's Petra Massey to find out about the show and 20 years of being a spy monkey.
My name is Petra Massey and I am the female company member of Spy Monkey.
20 years of Spy Monkey, you've been in it from the start. Did you expect to see two decades?
Yes, and more. I'm going to be the Spy Monkey until we die. That's what I think. Whether they want to or not, I don't care. I think just for the hell of, like, the four of us sticking together until we die and being really wrinkly and still getting our little bodies out would make me laugh. Don't know if it would make other people laugh. But, yeah.
Hasn't changed at all over those years, because what everyone expects from Spy Monkey is clowning, surrealism, stupid songs, all-round daftness, physical theatre, juvenile humour. Has it mutated and shifted, or is it still pretty much as it was on day one?
I would say in one respect it hasn't changed a jot, especially because we're going to be doing a show, Cooped, which we did when we were in our 30s, and we are changing it up a little bit. But our work there, yeah, it's definitely developed. I mean, the most recent show, well, we know we just did Christmas Carol, and that was our first attempt at a family show, which it was still a fruity show, and there was enough in there for the adults, I would say, and it still had that irreverent, subversive sort of tilt, lilt. But there, it was definitely four kids, four families. So we were really, really proud of that. That was with, and then the show we did before that, which was definitely in a different direction, with the brilliant Brightonian I, Tim Crouch. And we did a show, Complete Deaths, which was a completely different exploration for us. Yeah, really, really interesting. It was really challenging. So, yeah, I think over the years, our work has definitely developed. And maybe Complete Deaths isn't our funniest show, but I think
it was all the deaths in Shakespeare, wasn't it?
It was 75 deaths in Shakespeare, yeah. And that was a brilliant challenge. I didn't even know there was that many, and including The Fly. And Tim took us to a different place. Tim took us in a very different direction, and we struggled with it. But I think it was really good for us as performers individually and as a group, just to grow and know that we don't always have to rely on the gag and the funny, that there are, you know, other ways and other approaches. And I was really proud, actually, of the work. Even though it might not be my most favourite Spy Monkey show, I was really proud of it.
Going back then to Cooped, so Cooped is a reworking of an older show. What was your process in looking at that older show and going, like, well, here we are, however many years later. You know, this is what's worked, this is what didn't work. This is how we're updating it.
Interestingly, the political climate has changed quite dramatically from when we did it in our 30s to now. And we're reworking some of the numbers. And we've had lots of big discussions about that, because I think we never do shows or theatre or anything to shock or to offend or to upset. We do it very much from the clown perspective of finding things funny in a very joyous and naive and sort of fresh, with fresh eyes kind of way. which is how we approached the work when we were in our 30s. And now there are certain things in that show that will not be probably received in the same kind of way. And we've had kind of lots of, not difficult conversations, but kind of we're all in a little bit different camps. But we've decided there's one or two numbers that we don't want people just to focus on that because of the change in political climate. So we're moving things on, and I think that's a good thing.
This is political correctness, is it? For want of a better phrase.
God, in a way, yeah. I mean, I never thought I'd kind of say that, because I kind of like to think that, you know, we can do anything. But I think now you just can't, really. I think you have to be careful, and I think it's quite a delicate place, this world right now, and I think we have to look out and look after each other. And if that means honing down our comedy a little bit, and I can hear lots of people going, oh, you loser, but I don't know, I just think, yeah, I think we have to be more sensitive, and I think it's necessary at this particular time in our lives, and I think it's a bit of a wake-up call, really.
So Cooped is described as Hitchcock's Rebecca meets the Pink Panther.
Yeah.
How? Where?
Gosh. Yes. I mean, it is very cartoony in the way Pink Panther's very cartoony, but we've tried to tell a story, a brilliant kind of love, and very a twisted story, you know, in the same way with Rebecca, that it's, you know, set in an old country mansion, and it's very stylized in that way. And it goes off left field. It goes into all these different kind of different worlds, but then we keep coming back to the story. The story we kept, you know, it's a classic kind of, almost like an Agatha Christie, so people can hang on to that kind of framework, which means that we can divert off into the very cartoony world and then keep coming back to the thread of the story as well. So that means that we can release all sorts of kind of comedic effects and worlds, which if we just stuck to the story, we wouldn't be able to. And also it's our way of crowbarring in all the things that we've always wanted to do on stage, basically. Come and see it.
You're performing it in Worthing. Do you think Worthing is ready for Spy Monkey?
Totally. Are we ready for Worthing? That's the thing. No, I tell you, the Worthing Pavilion have been amazing. I think it's the best publicity we've ever had. And we're really proud, actually, to be part of extending the Brighton Festival to Worthing. It's the neighbouring town, and I love it. I really, really like Worthing. And I think it's really good that Brighton Festival is supporting, you know, theatres further afield now. And it's spreading. We're spreading. Yeah, who knows? Where's next? Don't know.
That's Spy Monkey's Petra Massey talking about Cooped. It's at the Pavilion Theatre in Worthing. It runs from this Wednesday through to Sunday at the Brighton Festival.
And you've been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, DAB and online, Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. during the festival, repeated 10 p.m. and 9 a.m. the next day.
Thank you to today's guests, Nicole Leckie, Pippa Smith, Petra Massey, reviewers Mark Johnson and Kyla Harris. I'm Melita Dennett. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and we'll both be back at the same time tomorrow.
Going to play you out the little drop of Dream Monday that Mark Johnson loved so much. So from me, Melita and Rebecca, see you tomorrow.
Bye.